You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
The whole business of giving a song an Oscar might have got off on the wrong foot. Regular listeners to this series will know that hardly a month ever goes past without my chucking an old boot or a flower pot at Sweet Leilani, the Hawaiian complaint which won the award in 1937 when there were dozens of better songs waiting in the wings. That, of course, is the most blatant miscarriage of justice from the vintage years, but not until last week, when I began glancing at the nomination lists for the different seasons, did it occur to me that even before Sweet Leilani, which, by the way, by some Freudian slip I often mistype as Sweat Leilani, even before that song made a mockery of the voting procedures, there had been some funny goings on. In that very first year of 1934, the prize went to a Con Conrad piece called The Continental, featured to the brink of dementia in the Astaire Rogers picture The Gay Divorcee. Now, if ever that picture comes up on TV on some sleepy Sunday afternoon, we're always stupefied by the elaborateness of the production. What looks like every extra in Hollywood dances The Continental for 17 consecutive minutes. Maybe that is the longest musical sequence ever, if you discount arty strokes like the ballet in The American in Paris. Now, while The Continental was never quite my favourite song, it seems not such a bad winner. And last week when I looked at the other candidates, I didn't feel like changing my mind. There were only two. There was another Fred and Ginger epic called The Carioca, written by Vincent Newmans while flying down to Rio, and a Robin and Ranger song called Love in Bloom, which was ruined years ago by the parodists. So maybe, I thought to myself, The Continental was the right choice. But it then occurred to me that three nominations wasn't very much, and that maybe there were other candidates. When I started to investigate, the choice of The Continental began to look a bit silly. For instance...
Stay as sweet as you are. Don't let a thing ever change you. Stay as sweet as you are. Don't let a soul rearrange you. Don't ever lose all the charm you possess. Your loveliness, darling, the way you say yes. Stay as sweet as you are, discreet as you are. You're divine, dear. Stay as grand as you are, and as you are. Tell me that you're mine, dear. Young and gay are old and gray. Near to me are afar. Night and day I pray that you'll always stay as sweet as you are. Young and gay are old and gray. Near to me are afar. Night and day I pray that you'll always stay as sweet as you.
Stay As Sweet As You Are, sung there by Nat Cole, was composed by our old friend Harry Revel for a plotless, mindless, and I think harmless comedy called College Rhythm. And if you remember, a few weeks back I played that very same Nat Cole record and wondered aloud if anybody had any useful information about Revel, who especially interested me because he was a Londoner who didn't emigrate to America till he was a grown man. Well, we haven't done with Harry Revel yet this afternoon because it begins to look as if he could have counted himself very unlucky not to have won that first Oscar. Stay As Sweet As You Are is a better song, I think, than The Continental. And in addition, there were one or two other Revel songs that year which also might have won. As to information about him, there are two letters. One comes from an ex-musician called Harry Kahn of Finchley. And he writes that in 1929, before joining Joe Loss's band, he, Mr. Kahn, hung around Archer Street looking for work. And one of his fellow unemployed was Harry Revel. And Mr. Kahn says the pair of them used to have tea together. And while Mr. Kahn stuck it out and eventually got a job, Revel got fed up with the waiting and went west, with what spectacular results we all know. Mr. Kahn remembers Revel as a rather retiring young character with a slightly pockmarked face and a friendly disposition. I'm much obliged to Mr. Kahn for passing on these details, and I may as well use them as a pretext to play the second of Harry Revel's 1934 songs, Worth Thinking About.
Thy neighbor, walk up and say, how be you? Gee, but I'm glad to see you, pal. How's tricks? What's new? Love thy neighbor, offer to share his burden. Tell him to say the word and you will see him through. Especially if there should be a beautiful girl next door. Why don't you say to that girl next door? Now don't think I'm bold, but my mother told me to love thy neighbor, and you will find your labor a great deal easier. Life will be breezier if you love thy neighbor.
Crosby originally sang that one in a very odd sort of picture called We're Not Dressing, which was a kind of a sort of an adaptation of James Barry's play The Admirable Crichton. And what I love about it is that the screen credits list three writers. Now, what a bunch of goons those executives must have been. Three writers to miswrite what Barry had already written. Anyway, the songs redeemed it. Love Thy Neighbour was only one of them, and among the others was a very useful one called May I. Now, one of the serious issues of 1934, which is always popping up, is that monstrosity, Hollywood Party. The picture that somehow managed to have everybody in it and yet be absolutely empty. It was based on an idea by Howard Dietz, and it had Jimmy Durante playing a character called Schnarzan. The supporting cast included the Three Stooges, Laurel and Hardy, Mr. Durante, Shirley Ross, Harry Barris, and Mickey Mouse. No plot, of course, but a lot of people. This was the one where Rodgers and Hart miswrote Blue Moon and hastily changed their minds about the lyric. The studio changed its mind about the picture, and who can blame them? Howard Dietz wisely forgot to mention this film in his otherwise exhaustive autobiography. But if he had mentioned it, he could have pointed to one good thing about the picture. A thoroughbred song that sadly never survived the horrific circumstances of its unveiling and wasn't really rescued until many years later when Guess Who dusted it off.
I've had my moments, I will confess. My fleeting moments of tenderness. I sang of true love, I played guitars, then found a new love 'neath tropical stars. This time's the last time, this time it's new. Love as a pastime for me is through. I've had my moments, my big bad moments, but now my one big moment is you. I sang of true love, and I played guitars, then found a new love 'neath tropical stars. This time's the last time, this time it's new. Love is a pastime, for me is through. I've had my moments, my big bad moments, but now my one big moment is you.
I've Had My Moments, 1934, and one of the last truly vintage songs to be written by the old team of Walter Donaldson and Gus Kahn. Now, personally, I would always give that song my vote in preference to the Continental. The only trouble was they never asked me, even though I was 6 years old at the time, which was, of course, the mental age of so many of the Hollywood executives of the period. Let's turn to another likely item from that year. A picture about a typical little guy, just like you and I, whose archaeologist father happens to leave him $77 million. Now, the little guy, being a professional idiot, keeps nearly losing the money to a succession of crooks straight out of central casting. But in the end, he wins through. In the opening sequences, we see this little guy surrounded by a bunch of waifs and strays who have nothing in common with him apart from a determination to sing and dance. Now, Walter Donaldson and Gus Kahn, having recovered from the traumas of Hollywood Party, wrote a song to fit this scene where the young millionaire-to-be teams up with the kids and tells them what's what.
I'll have a golden castle, grand and tall, with 18 butlers standing in the hall, and Walt Disney paintings on the wall. When my ship comes in.
When My Ship Comes In, sung there by Kid Millions himself, Eddie Cantor. And that was the production, by the way, where Sam Goldwyn wanted some Red Indians in one sequence and refused to recruit them from the army of extras, saying you could hire as many genuine Indians as you needed from the local reservoir. Well, somebody should have given him an award for that, too. Now, that song has a kind of homely appeal, but I would be willing to concede that it has nothing like the subtlety of this next one, which in my musician's days I always thought was a piece of composition of a very high standard. It came from a peculiar kind of picture, though, a picture where it was difficult to get your bearings because it was obvious that the leading lady was fooling about and refusing to take any of the business seriously. Much to her credit, because that's the best way to play comedy of the type that Hollywood believed in 1934. For instance, this leading lady has two men who are pursuing her, and when asked which one she prefers, she says, "I prefer two kinds of men, domestic and foreign." Later, when asked what she feels about foreign affairs, she says she hasn't had one yet. And when she takes a look at the villain, she delivers one of the most devastating put-downs in the history of 20th century small talk, saying his mother should have thrown him away and kept a stork. Well, by now, you will all have guessed who this leading lady was. She also wrote the script, more than filled the screen, and dwarfed everybody in the vicinity except the band leader, with whom she shared the honours in this outstanding Arthur Johnson, Sam Coslow ballad.
My own flame, I can't even think of his name. But it's funny now and then how my thoughts go drifting back again. My own flame, my old flame, my new lover's arms seem so tame, for there never was a gent more magnificent or elegant than my old flame. I've met so many who have fascinating ways, a fascinating game in their minds. Some that took me up to the sky, for their attempts at love were only imitations of my old flame. Just can't think of his name, but I'll never be the same until I discover what became of my old flame. My old flame. Funny now and then, how my thoughts go drifting back again to my old flame, my old flame. My new lovers all seem so tame, while there never was a gent more magnificent or elegant than mine. Old flame. I met so many who have fascinating ways of fascinating gaze in their face. Some that took me off to the sky, but their attempts at love were only imitations of my old flame. But I'll never be the same until I discover what became of my old flame.
Dimly perceived through the sandstorm there was My Old Flame, featuring the belle of the 90s, Mae West, accompanied by the orchestra, which also appeared in the picture, Duke Ellington. Mae West is obviously the only woman that ever hummed while accompanied by the Ellington Band. Now, if I had been on that Oscar adjudicating committee, I would have suggested that My Old Flame at least got a nomination. But was it any better than this piece of work coming up now? Regarding the surrounding circumstances of this next song, we have to remember that by 1934, the big joke in Hollywood, apart from the pictures, was the fact that Greta Garbo kept wanting to be alone, except when it was time to collect the salary. Miss Garbo, by this time, had succeeded in creating the myth that all Scandinavian actresses were either geniuses or charlatans, but whichever category they fell into, they were all eccentric. And so, in a picture featuring Anne Southern, they worked up a plot about a film producer making a picture with a big Swedish temperamental star who wants to be alone so badly that she walks out in mid-production, leaving the studio to hire a Brooklyn sideshow performer to take her place. Now, the hero trains this sideshow performer in an authentic Swedish dialect, although where he got it from, nobody knows. The imposture works, and the ending is neat enough to satisfy a three-year-old child, but nobody else. But yet again, the redeeming thing was the music. There were four songs, and one of them has remained popular to this day. Written by Howard Arlen and Ted Kohler, it's often confused with a Cole Porter song called Let's Do It, and is famous as the one that quotes Hamlet.
Let's fall in love, why shouldn't we fall in love? Our hearts are made of it, let's take a chance, why be afraid of it? Let's close our eyes and make our own paradise. Little we know of it, still we can try to make a go of it. We might have been made for each other. Let our hearts discover. Let's fall in love, why shouldn't we fall in love? Now is the time for it while we are young. Let's fall in love. Let's fall in love, why shouldn't we fall in love? Our hearts are made of it, let's take a chance, why be afraid of it? Close our eyes and make our own paradise. Little we know of it, still we can try to make a go of it. We know all the world loves a lover. To be or not to be, let our hearts discover. fight for it. Now is the time. Let's fall in love.
Written by Howard Arlen and Ted Kohler for a picture which, surprisingly enough, was called Let's Fall in Love. I don't know if Garbo ever saw that picture, or if she did, what she thought about it. Nothing, probably. Sometimes you wonder how these things worked out. For instance, Mae West makes a picture at Paramount called Belle of the 90s. The songs are by Arthur Johnston and Sam Coslow, and Duke Ellington's band is featured. So when, in the same year, the same studio hires Johnston and Coslow to write for another picture, Ellington gets scooped up as part of the package. Unfortunately, Mae West was not, but the resulting farrago, Murder at the Vanities, had one of the big songs of the decade, which came to a sudden ugly end when the deadliest of all assassins got his hands on it. Now, Sam Coslow was the first big songwriter I ever met. As a matter of fact, it was so long ago that I wasn't much interested in songwriters at the time, and only asked him a question or two to be polite and make some small talk. This was back in 1957, and I remember saying to Coslow, "When you first heard the recording of Spike Jonze killing your song, what did you do?" Well, he gave me a kind of strained look, and then he smiled, saying, "At first, I was inclined to reach for my lawyer. But then they brought me the news that the Jonze record had sold a million. After that," said Coslow, "I went quietly." But let me now come back to Harry Revel, who in 1934 wrote some songs for a picture called Shoot the Works. What they should have done was shoot the writers, but the picture did get finished. It was about a flea circus hustler, played by Jack Oakey, who gets the girl in the final reel. It was full of flagpole sitters and intellectuals of that kind. It had a song with one of the worst titles of the decade, A Bowl of Chop Suey and Yui. Not the work of Harry Revel, by the way. There was one song by Revel and Matt Gordon, which enjoyed a smallish revival around 1950, and seems to me worth another one any time.
With my eyes wide open, I'm dreaming. Can it be true? I'm holding you close to my heart. With my eyes wide open, I'm dreaming. You're with me now, sharing each vow, never to part. I'm so afraid to close my eyes, afraid that I'll find this lovely thrill is just a silly illusion. With my eyes wide open, I'm dreaming. Do I deserve such a break? Paint me to prove I'm away. I can't believe that you're really mine. I'm dreaming. Do I deserve such a break? Pinch me to prove I'm awake. I can't believe that you're really.
That was Harry Revel's candidate for an Oscar in 1934 with My Eyes Wide Open, I'm Dreaming, one of several songs, that Rebel wrote, which were snubbed by the Oscar committee for that year. Now, for the rest of this programme, I ought to devote time to the most extraordinary snubbing of all. The fact that Harry Warren never got a look in. Because in 1934, Warren was especially busy with Al Dubin and could have won the bauble half a dozen times over. Take, for instance, a little film called 20 Million Sweethearts. This was the one about the singing waiter who goes on the radio and becomes famous. This picture was so bad and its plot so ridiculous that in 1949 they remade it as My Dream Is Yours. But in the original, Harry Warren and Al Dubin produced a song called I'll String Along With You. That was the one where Al Dubin, in a rare fall from grace, rhymes come along with string along. Well, Dick Powell was the waiter and hardly had time to change from his white coat into another white coat for another picture where he played a songwriter. Now, this other film was interesting for the likes of us because the script called for the appearance of another songwriter. And this was played by another songwriter, Sammy Fain. Busby Berkeley had a field day here. In one scene, we see Dick Powell asleep in a subway train, dreaming that the faces of the advertisements are all the faces of his girlfriend. Well, I've heard of two-faced heroines before, but this is ridiculous. All the girls turn into bits of a jigsaw puzzle, which then makes itself. And that was how we first heard this song.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, 'cause I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky, 'cause I only have eyes for you. I don't know if we're in a garden or on a crowded avenue. You are here, so am I. Maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from view. And I only have eyes for you.
The several songs of 1934 that never got a look in when it came to the awards. Anyway, that's it for now. See you same time next week.
Been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online.